Hi, it's Paul Camilos. Welcome to Series 6 of Shooting the Breeze. Join me and my co-host Jacinta Govind alongside the STB crew as we cover women's hoops and women in hoops. We'll share conversations and get a little deeper with inspiring players, amazing coaches, and the legends from behind the scenes. Especially in this series, we'll be talking to dream chasers that give it their all and lead with their heart.
I think it's still got some ways to go. I think the lack of female representation in coaching is still something that really needs to be addressed. Like over here in the West, unfortunately, there's only one female in the entire women's coaching staff.
Wow.
Head coaches, there's only one, and there's none in the men. So one out of 27 teams. So I feel like more needs to be done in that, and also more female voices.
After connecting early in their journey, we reconnect with Lauren Gandini in the next Dream Chasers installment. A former baller, now lawyer and businesswoman, she co-founded, alongside fellow director Brianna Mercer, Stella Athlete Management 3 years ago. With a female athlete focus, Lauren and Stella Athletes are primed to care for and advise the growing number of professional female athletes across sporting codes. Lauren is a FIBA-accredited agent, one of only a half dozen female agents in Australia. Stella Athletes is a business for its time. Female-led, it's riding the crest of professional women's sports, where athletes are not only more aware of the opportunities, but are seeking like-minded representation in how to best tap into them. Lauren touches on the all-important education piece, with networking that she emphasises completes a well-rounded and holistic approach. As an athlete herself, Lauren has a unique perspective and understands their concerns. And whilst there has been considerable progress for athletes, there's still a long way to go across the sporting landscape. Enjoy. Welcome to Shooting the Breeze. Joining me, my co-host Jacinta Govind, and we've got a special guest from West Australia, one of the co-founders of Stella Athletes, Lauren Gandini. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Lauren, there'll be people who will know of you and of Stella, and there'll also be a lot of people who won't. Why don't we just start this off with a bit of an overview of you and your background and Stella Athletes and how it all came to be.
Certainly. So myself, I grew up, yes, over here in Western Australia, born and bred, and I just really grew up, to be honest, loving sport. Every sport, basketball was probably a favourite for me, but just throughout, from the very beginning of my life, that was always such a strong purpose for me. Obviously, at that time, opportunities to progress a career into professional sport for women was not really there. So I went on to study and worked as a lawyer, which I found a hugely rewarding career. I really enjoyed being a lawyer. I worked a lot with clients and did a lot of advocacy there, so really loved that part of it, but always kept playing sports. So kept playing, it was called SBL back in the day. And really just kept that love for sport and kept that network there. And had been working as a lawyer for, I think, 8 or 9 years when I fell pregnant. So took a step back from sport, took a step back from the job I was doing at the time, and was actually walking around the river with a very good friend of mine, Brianna, who's also a lawyer. She's been my friend for a long, long time. And she herself as well played a lot of sport growing up, similarly very passionate. And I said to her, I'm really thinking about what to do next because I love sport and I'm feeling very drawn to sport, but I don't want to stray too far from what I'm doing because I love what I do as a lawyer. I love working with people. And she said, as I had a 3-month-old in the pram, she said, we should start a female sporting agency. She said, it's something I've always thought about and I think now's the time. And it's just like one of those cliche moments you hear about, you know, a light bulb sort of goes off and you think that is exactly what I want to do with my life. It sort of combined for me, that idea combined everything I had ever been passionate about and felt like I could offer the world. So yeah, that's how it began pretty much from there. You know, we sat down and did a few business plans and almost 3 years later, here we are.
And it's too bad this episode aren't recording any video because I think what I love the most about you giving that answer is how much you were smiling when you were speaking, because that tells us that you obviously love it.
Yes. And again, it feels like such a cliche thing to say. And running your own small business while you have, similarly small child, that's not been easy, but it's the love of this job and getting to make such an impact that makes it so rewarding.
At the moment, you're 3 years in. How many athletes do you have with the agency?
So we have approximately 80 at the moment. We do work across several sports, and we've got a team of 5 agents at the moment. We've sort of got one agent specialising in each sport. That's the model we're going down. But we've got also the model where, agents can cross sports to support as well. So that's been an exciting part of it. And it's been really exciting getting more women in the agency space as well, because it's traditionally been very, very male-dominated space.
And I know this is a cliche as well, but I think most people, their start and finish of an agent and an agency kind of runs with what they've seen in Jerry Maguire.
Yes.
Right. Now,
for sure.
I'm guessing it's nothing like that in reality.
I think agency has come a long way, but I always say to people, I feel like the messaging behind Jerry Maguire is fantastic, because at the end of the day, it's just like my career as a lawyer. It's about the care for the athlete, the really genuine care about them, and not just churning them out as a product. And I feel like, definitely there's some industries that operate that way, but I do feel optimistic that we've shifted much more towards our best interests. Yeah, really acting in the best interest of an athlete rather than, like I said, just sort of churning out the product and taking the 10% and see you later. So I love the messaging behind Jerry Maguire when he's got, he wants to do it differently. But a lot of it might be quite, it's a little bit Americanized, that movie, but some of it aren't too far off, to be honest.
One of the things that's always fascinated me is the approach you would take to identify athletes that you want to have with your agency, because I'm guessing there's always more athletes than an agency can handle at any particular point in time.
Yes.
What's the process you use?
So it's actually very different for every sport, which makes things fun. I'll use AFL just as an example. I know we're on a basketball show, but AFL, for example, and this is the same in men's and women's, they actually have a portal. If they're under 18 years of age, that you have to actually go through this portal and send them a letter, and it goes to them, their parents, their talent manager, their club sort of manager, and then you have to wait 7 days, and it's a real process in our Aussie rules comp in terms of, you sort of identify the talent, and then it's very strict around how you approach them. And I guess for those sorts of sports, you're just really looking at the talent pathways. There's definitely some mature age talent, but, very much, sort of those pathway talent. Basketball's a bit different because, as we know, the college system is so huge in basketball, and a lot of sports don't have that college system. So I would say predominantly the talent comes from the college pathway, but it's also very worthwhile keeping an eye on the junior talent, because some players don't go to college and they choose to go straight to professional at 17 or 18. And then you've also got the high performers at NBL1 that might have, didn't go to college or, miss their chance in pathways and sort of get a contract from there. My sister Emma is a great example of that. She got her first pro contract at, I think it was 27, because she just had been such a defensive pest in the league for so long, playing against some of the best players, playing some of the best WNBL players. So I think clubs are really willing to look at the NBL1 as well as that feeder league to sort of reward the high performers there.
And especially NBL1, more and more, obviously depending on conference, but I'd say more and more, being able to secure stable sponsorship and finances. And I think female athletes in particular are probably in a really good position now to start really properly shopping around to find the best Absolutely. Opportunity and contract for them in NBL1.
Absolutely. I have been so impressed with the NBL1 competition. I don't think there's anything else quite like it in the world in terms of the level of professionalism and how people can, use this as a really legitimate part-time. Sometimes it's a, sort of a full-time job for them. And it absolutely then, gives us a really useful role there too, because players can definitely use it as more, you know, loyalty is important, and obviously there's lots of factors that go into a basketball decision, but also, you know, especially females are now empowered to go, actually, I'm going to go to market and I'm going to see what's out there. And in my view, so they should.
And does your process when you're working particularly with local female basketball players, does your process of working with them and trying to find them, you know, the best opportunity for them at that point in time in their career, is it different when they're looking for local opportunities versus opportunities overseas?
Yes and no. Probably what our main role is, the way we approach things is we have the connection with the club. You know, we get everything together for the player and we go, right, we've got all your stats, you've got your highlights, got everything ready to go. And then we connect with the club and we're really providing an offering. You know, we're sort of saying, you know, here's what we've got. You know, we might say to them, what are you looking for? You know, what do you need here? And then we can sort of help them suggest. And although it might be different in other leagues, the way that's approached, it is a similar approach in that you really are working a bit more with the club to say, well, hey, yeah, we've got this roster, but what is it that your team needs? So obviously overseas is a bit different in that there's a few more checks that you want to be doing, because obviously in Australia, you know, even if you've never heard of a town, you can be pretty sure they're going to be pretty well looked after and they're still in the country. It's probably more so when you're looking at the overseas things, you're just looking at some of those extra checks to make sure you're sending them somewhere safe, essentially.
When you're putting together that package to take to a club, does it vary from player to player how you structure that package, or is it more like this is how we do it?
So at the first, it's quite a general overview, and it's really just got quick snippets of every player's information. And then once a club say that, oh, I quite like that player, I know that player, I want to hear more about it, then we've got a bit more information sort of on hand to say, right, well, here's two or three paragraphs and here's maybe some other clips and here's their goals, their strengths, that sort of thing. So at the start, yeah, it is quite a general overview, but then sort of break it down to more information.
You've been involved, as you said, you've played sport. It must give you a unique perspective, because it's like you've been on both sides of the fence. You know, how do you find that things have evolved over time, particularly with, you know, the growing professionalism in women's sports, growth of NBL One? How have you found that things have shifted over the period of time that you've been involved with sport, and particularly over the last 3 years?
Yeah, look, just especially in basketball, the impact that I have seen, you know, I played, I think I had an 11 or 12 year career, and, you know, for the most of it, we'd have six people at our games, and it would be like, you know, my dad and a couple of friends that wanted to have a few cruises in the box and watch the game. Like, whereas that same club now, they sell out every single game, men's and women's, and it's phenomenal. And it's the clubs should be credited for that, for going, you know, what if we market this, men's and women, you know, we market it the right way, we'll get the people there. And then obviously they, you know, there's a lot of financial considerations for clubs, but, you know, the more people that are coming to watch the games, the better that club can do for the entertainment value as well. So that's probably one of the biggest observations I've seen that's terrific. Another point is probably the equal media exposure. I remember, and again, this was towards the end of my career, so it wasn't too long ago, the live broadcasting was just starting. Now, at that time, I was playing for a club where the women's team had significantly more success than the men's, and to be honest, they probably had more people coming to watch. You know, people would go to the women's game and then leave. Left for the men's, like they had a really strong, they were a very good club and they had a really strong following. Yet they brought out we're going to do a game of the week. It wasn't a K, it was a very basic one. And they said, we're just doing the men's. And our team said, huh? Why? You're there. You know, you're there and it's this and this is important. And, you know, very quickly to their credit, they did get back to us. But they really put on the whole, well, you know, you've got to do more to market the sport before people want to hear and read about it. And it's like, what do you mean? Like, that's, you're going to be right there. Surely it's not too much, you know, for you to just do the women's game too. Anyway, it wasn't just me. There was a few players that really went, you know, firmly at that. And from that next week on, men and women's every week. And we see the standard now being on KO. Like, that's a phenomenal service and product, I feel, for people to just that. you know, might not watch much basketball, or, you know, might be flicking around on a Friday night and going, what am I going to watch? Or there's a blowout of a footy. You know, just to be able to sit down and watch a really good level of basketball, and it's local as well, that's been tremendous. And I think it's still got some ways to go. I think the lack of female representation in coaching is still something that really needs to be addressed. Like over here in the West, unfortunately, there's only one female in the entire women's coaching staff.
Wow.
Head coaches, there's only one, and there's none in the men. So one out of 27 teams. So I feel like more needs to be done in that, and also more female voices in the game. And I feel like Jacinta are really leading the way in that regard. But and it's not about all women doing all women. It's just about, I feel, in every game, having that balance, because I think things we can strive towards.
Yeah, I think it's an important distinction to make, that it is just about balance, and that's the root of true gender equality at the end of the day. It's not that one needs to be better than the other or one needs more than the other. That's the exact opposite. Equality means equal. And at the same time, in certain situations, sometimes men are on the inferior side of that too. But when we're specifically talking about representation and opportunity in sport, women are certainly, but we are catching up, but we still got a bit more to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that's bothered me is that in a lot of cases, what we see in terms of media for women's sports, there's a lot of negative stories that lead with women's sports. And I mean, you know, Jacinta highlighted one on Twitter this evening where, you know, Caitlin Clark, her first game, right, she put up 20 points. I think it was 20 points. But they were talking about the turnovers, not the positive side of the story. They went for the negative side. So, I mean, you know, as an agent and as somebody who's got a wide view over sport, how does that change?
It's very interesting. it's correct. It's a very true observation there. And you wonder if it's because there's finally momentum coming from women's sport. You know, you do hear a perspective, for example, that, you know, women should be, you know, in terms of criticism and scrutiny, it's true equality to actually have scrutiny of the competition of the players as you would on the men's side. Now, I know what you're saying, Paul, and I agree, there is sometimes unfair criticism, and it's sort of leading with that as opposed to, I guess, focusing on the good things they're doing. And perhaps that is part of the pedestal that we're put, you know, a lot of people are putting women's sport on at the moment. Like, we're really, really pushing here, and it's giving naysayers or people the opportunity to sort of go, waiting for it to fail a little bit. And I feel like there's always going to be those people, but I feel that there's enough good people behind that push and momentum, and I feel like there's enough good and reasonable people that see through it, that maybe go, don't actually care too much one way or the other, and I probably won't watch, but this is wrong. This is actually wrong, and I'll get behind it just, you know, for the sake that it is wrong. I hope that answered your question. I think I went around in the circle a little bit. But,
yeah, it was kind of one of those change the world type questions. But,
yeah,
you know, it's something that, you know, particularly because I'm scanning the sports news pretty much daily, that you see all these stories, but invariably there's stories where, you know, the headline seems to have a negative slant before it gets into positive parts of the news as well. And that's got to change.
Yeah.
Because it's unfair to start with.
Yeah.
But also, it's like, at what point do you realise that you're doing a disservice to yourself as a reporter when you're putting out the negative stories consistently?
Yeah. Yeah, certainly.
Okay, so now after we've had that diversion, I'm kind of curious, and I'm sure everybody who's listening wants to understand more about agents and agencies, but what sort of services does Stella provide? And I'm kind of curious about, you know, do you do anything that's a little bit different to other agencies?
So when I'm speaking to athletes, especially if someone's never had an agent before or they're not sure how it works, I explain that the bread and butter, the main service most people come to an agent for, is that contract. So it might be helping them find contract offers. It might be helping them negotiate them and then helping them to manage them. So if issues come up during from the club or from the player, if there's injuries, someone that's just in their back pocket, they can pick up the phone and say, I need you to sort this for me. That is probably the most important reason I would say athletes come to an agent. Second most important, I would say, is being leveraging an athlete's profile. So that can be things like working with brands. You know, you got your big, you got your endorsement deals. It can be doing extra promotional work. So that's going out and doing speaking or clinics or, you know, attending events, guest appearances. And look, clubs do this in a varying degree of success, but an agent can also help an athlete prepare for what they want to do life after sport. So just helping maybe put some building blocks in place so they can use their profile while they're in sport to help leverage in life after sport. And I think from our perspective, like, you know, I had a lot of the skills that I brought over from law, and I think we do the advocacy piece extremely well. I think we're very engaged in what our athletes needing at the time. You know, we're really able to have their back and make them feel like we have them back at all times. But it was really important for us to really provide holistic support. So not just say, you know, everyone loves that word holistic. And we sat down a few times and went, but what is that actually going to mean? Because everyone says holistic, but, you know, and yes, we've got a female approach, which is great. I feel like we have experienced barriers ourselves. You know, we've sort of known how to sell female athletes maybe a bit stronger. But, you know, we do put things in around them. Like, we do fortnightly webinars that the athletes can jump on. So we get, you know, people from, like, we had someone from a commentator program come on and talk about how athletes might get into commentating. Same with coaching, you know, how to take the step into professional coaching. We had someone come and talk about tax as an athlete. You know, someone jumping on to talk about fertility, someone from Monash IVF in the short term. So we put them in, and they're obviously optional for the athletes, but they are just, you know, if the athlete is interested about something, to say, all right, well, you know, I've got this opportunity to hear from this person. And the other thing is we do our stellar athlete events too. So we host at least one in each state each year, and we get all the athletes together and usually have a guest speaker or two and give them that chance to network. And they've been really amazing, because you'll see then get to know each other and then go, oh, I'd love to come to your game. So then they bring their team along to a different sport, and you're really starting to build that, you know, support holistically. So I think for us, it's about putting in those extra perks for athletes as well, to say, right, you know, we're providing you this service, but also by being part of Stella, you get access to all of this as well.
So you're essentially creating a community as well, which is super important and sometimes hard to do. And I imagine that given that you represent and support a lot of athletes from different sports and a lot of different levels, especially if it's their first time of, like you said, of having an agent, I can imagine mm-hmm. it can be a little bit bewildering disorientating sometimes. So creating a community with the other athletes that you have sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, it's something we've loved it, and we've gotten, you know, the athletes really love it too. So that's been really nice to build towards a community, absolutely.
And how often, you know, given that you have your own experience of being an athlete in a semi-professional league, how often do you still get to work with athletes now as an agent who you find a little bit, not what's the right word, not misinformed, but maybe a little bit unaware of what their rights are and what opportunities they actually have to explore? Because I remember when I was in that semi-professional kind of professional phase of my career, I really didn't know what was going on or what I could have made more of an opportunity of and maximized, because I felt like I didn't really have anyone to talk to about mm-hmm. it or even think of it. So does that still come up when you're working with athletes these days, or are they a bit more savvy?
I feel like the increase in social media, people probably, they understand that there are opportunities out there that they might not have previously known about, but I think understanding how to get them is still a big question mark. And some just have no idea what level they would even be at. So I think also being able to help and guide and say, right, well, you know, for your trajectory, a WNBL DP, well, that might be a really good step for you. It's not for everyone, but that could actually be a really good step for you. Whereas for someone else, well, maybe it is going to find, you know, a contract somewhere over in Europe. So I would say, yeah, definitely it's increased in terms of awareness of that they're there, but athletes a lot of athletes still very much need that help connecting them to where the best thing for them might be at that time.
One of the things you mentioned just before is about, you know, first-time athletes, first-time connecting with an agent. And as Jacinta said, it's probably a little bit intimidating, a bit disorienting. There's a lot going on. How does an agent break down those, you know, barriers, if you like, with a first-time player, you know, engaging with an agent?
I mean, speaking from my perspective, and it's been really interesting for me because, yeah, again, I've come from a legal background and I've always worked at nonprofits. So for me, you know, I've just had files come through. So, you know, we've had people say, please, I need your help. So it's been really interesting for the shoe to be on the other foot and me to be, you know, sort of having to almost sell myself a little bit because it doesn't come as naturally to me. However, it's an approach that I take is I sit with them and I ask if they've had an agent, do they know what an agent does? I start off in that conversation. And then one of the very first things I say to someone is, no one should make you feel like you need an agent, or no one should make you feel like you're going to fail without one. This has to be a decision that you feel will add value to your career. And I find that's helpful for athletes to go, okay, they're not going to, you know, put the sales pitch on me. And we listen to them. We say, what are your goals? And what, you know, what do you feel standing in the way of your goals? And I've had conversations where people have spoken. I've said, look, I don't know if you would find value in that. Like, and I still would talk through and go, well, there's all this, but, and I've been really honest about that. Now, in basketball, clubs will often pay your fee directly. So there can often not be a downside having an agent, to be honest. However, it's still a really relevant point. It is a trusted relationship, so it has to feel good for them. And then I think just by ending the conversation and saying, look, go away and have a good think about it. Like, I don't need an answer right now. I'm just giving that them that sort of comfort to make that decision in their own time.
Okay. I mean, I suppose it must be interesting because you touched on that other point, which is you've come from a not-for-profit legal background, and now you've got to do the lounge room pitch.
Selling, yeah. Yep. Yes, I do. And it's funny. My mum is actually a real estate agent, and my dad is a lawyer. So I feel like I float somewhere in between. And probably the benefit is my mum is a fantastic saleswoman, but she's that type of person that you just don't even know she's selling. You know, she sells everything just without even, you know, she's selling her favorite recipe. She's doing, that's just sort of the natural way she works. And I guess I've just grown up listening to that. So I've taken that approach of, yeah, it doesn't have to be pushy. It doesn't have to be salesy, you know, it can just be a really genuine conversation. So, but it's not been easy still, and I feel like it's still an area that I'm working on, is to not to sell yourself, but to just, you know, really lay the benefits on the table. Because I know, again, that's something that maybe women don't do as well sometimes, is we don't sort of back ourselves in. So still working on that part too.
One of the things that and I know Mary was curious about this as well, you work across multiple sporting codes. You've already mentioned one of the really, I never even knew that about AFL, having the portal thing. There must be a whole lot of differences between the various sports that you cover. What are they like? And what's unique about them that you can maybe pick and choose things that you learn from dealing with, say, AFL that you can apply to basketball or netball or some other sport?
Yeah, look, and I think the biggest benefit is that all CBAs are confidential for the large part. So really they're only meant to be seen by players, you know, representative clubs and leagues. So it can be really hard for the general public and sometimes even the athletes to know, you know, what are actually my entitlements, what are my rights here, what happens here. So the fact that we know mostly, some parts are still confidential, mostly how most of the sports operate, it means that we can have conversations with athletes and put things in their mind. So, you know, this is probably more just a sort of casual conversation, but they'll go, oh, I didn't realize this sport had that benefit. You know, why aren't we getting that? And it will sort of cause that maybe internal, well, you know, within their own code, in their own club. But the other thing is we have really good relationships with the players' associations, with the clubs and the leagues themselves. Often we'll just be talking and sort of, you know, spitballing, and they'll say, oh, well, you know, how do we deal with this? And I can say, well, actually, I know of a sport and they do it this way. And they'll go, that's a really good idea. And some of these people are really key decision makers in those sports and have gone, right, like, and I'm not sure why the sports aren't talking to begin with, but I think being able to talk to those key people and saying, look, this is what works really well in this sport, why don't you consider giving it a go? That's a really important piece from the advocacy piece we found. I think about maternity policies. Like, I just find that is one of the biggest issues still in women's sport. I think the maternity policies themselves are looking much, much better. You know, the female gets to choose largely what they do. You know, I remember in the first season of AFL, I had a friend send me her contract and she was like, can you look over it? Before I was an agent, can you look over it? There's nothing I can do because I have to sign it anyway, but can you just look at it? And it was like a 6-week season. You know, they probably got paid, I think it was, you know, a couple of dollars, whatever it was. But one of the things said, if you get pregnant, this contract is terminated. And I was just,
I'm sorry,
shocked.
What?
Yeah, I was shocked. And this would have been what, 2016, 15 maybe? And I was horrified. I was absolutely horrified. Forget the logistics, forget all of that. I just said, that can't be how a sport is operating like that. And from that point, I just realized what a strong issue that was going to be. So I think we're still, I think sports looking at each other and saying, what are we doing here? How can we be better? But I think, like, I believe sports are willing to listen and learn off each other too. And I think that's a really big benefit.
Yeah, because there's no paid maternity leave like every other salary paying job in sport.
Well, some do. So AFL do.
Oh, that's good. Okay,
yes, so this AFL is really have a full 12 months. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. AFL
full 12 months. Other sports are, I guess, getting there in bits and pieces. But for me also, it's not just what they get on leave, but it's how the sport supports them when they come back. Again, I was a very fit and active human before I had my child, and it was just, it's not an injury. You know, coming back from childbirth, you're not injured, but your body is just so, so different in so many different ways. And I remember a sport, I won't say which one it was, they had a girl that come back and, you know, they, you know, pat ourselves on the back, look at us, you know, we've got a, we're bringing, you know, she's had 12 months mat leave, how great's this? But they wouldn't let her participate in any drills until she could do a 2K time trial in a certain amount of time. Couldn't even do, you know, the warm-up, giving away the sport of it now, and had her running laps around the oval for the entire training session. And she was completely demoralized. She's like, I'm leaving my, you know, 6-month child at home to run laps. So I think that's something across all sports we're still grappling a bit with, is how do we support the women? But again, I'll use another example in AFL. Recently, you know, at first they went, right, we want to empower women, they can bring their, we'll pay them to bring their child and a support person away. For every away game they need to go. But some women started going, I actually don't want them to come for that trip. It's actually going to be, it's too much. So can I instead have that, you know, can I have that money put towards, you know, whatever, but basically a carer's sum or something like that for them to stay home. So the AFL recognise, yes, we will support you in whatever way you want to. So I feel like sport is listening, but I don't know if anyone really has a solution to that one just yet. But I think that is one of the biggest barriers to women continuing to play. You know, we see, you know, men absolutely just peaking in their careers at 31, 32. Maybe not peaking, but, like, you know, really having some of their strongest years, which directly obviously coincides with a female's fertile age. So I think that when we can really address that, I feel like that will open a lot of barriers for women.
It sounds to me from that, you know, I mean, okay, everybody keeps their CBAs as, you know, as closely held as nuclear launch codes, but maybe, just maybe, it would be smarter if the heads of the various sports got together in a room, okay, have it as secure as you want and put all those CBAs out on the table and try and figure out what's the smart way that we can leverage what all the different sports are doing to get a better package put together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, agreed.
Okay, so the next world-changing question, how do we do that?
I feel sports at the moment, and I know we do have some things, like we have the AAA, the Athletes something alliance, no, second aid. So in some way, so they've got that alliance, is actually partnered with Monash IVF.
Yeah.
So every athlete under that AAA get, you know, free access to all these webinars, everything like that. So it's not like they're not collaborating on some issues, but I think the other thing, Paul, is that sports are competing for talent. So sports are competing for that young pathway talent, and they need to provide the best option for female athletes, or they know that a 16, 17-year-old that is good at basketball, netball, cricket, rugby, soccer, athletics, whatever it may be, they're going, we want to make sure they come to our sport. And that has probably been one of the most terrific things that could have happened for women in sport, because it's made sports finally sit up and take it seriously. Because we saw in basketball and AFL, you know, how many players has basketball lost to AFL? Because AFL went rightly or wrongly, well, our salaries are, you know, double that for half the time, and you get everything. Like, we've had players that have gone from, yeah, basketball to an AFL club and just been astounded by the support and resources that they get. And, you know, looking at WNL at the moment, what they're going through, I think that's, it's been a good catalyst, because you can see that they understand that, and they're saying, we've got to be really competitive. We can't just rely on sort of being, you know, a popular sport anymore. We have to come to the table and provide, you know, working conditions for these athletes.
Yeah, working conditions is a great way to put it, because people forget that it is people's jobs. Mm-hmm. It's not something that they would choose to do for fun and because they enjoy it. It's still someone's job and bread and butter at the end of the day. And I think it's very easy to forget that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, again, it's not like, you know, money is the only thing on a kid's mind, but it is relevant. And kids want, you know, they want to make a career out of doing what they love, don't we all? So I think sports are more and more now going, okay, we actually have to make it better, not just for now, but so we can retain the best talent and have the best comp, and then, you know, be marketable because we have such a terrific comp, basically.
It brings up an interesting point, which is, you know, and you mentioned it before, there's a lot of competition for talent, but equally there's a lot of competition for eyeballs. As an agent, how do you try and prepare the athletes that you've got at the agency for the challenges that come with, you know, you're going to be out there, you've got to be, effectively, you've got to be promoting your sport pretty much all the time. So, in effect, they're not just an athlete, but they're also a spokesperson. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a role that some athletes may not be too comfortable in.
Yes. I feel like athletes do, especially with the rise of social media, it's becoming easier for athletes to get their message out there and have a platform. And I think that they do actually get pretty good support. You know, a lot of sports now have marketing teams and have commercial teams and sort of can help athletes with that. And we have some athletes and that honestly, they want to rock up, they want to play their game, go to work, and they want to go home, and they actually don't want to do anything else. And that's like, that's their, you know, that is entirely their prerogative. And we have some athletes like that. But the athletes that do want to use their voice and they do want to, you know, whether it be for the game or whatever reason, it's definitely about helping them develop their brand and their voice as an athlete. And we do work with athletes to help them with that as well. Like, you know, what is your messaging? How are we going to get this messaging across? But I feel like the sport, that is an aspect too, the sports are collectively getting better at as well, which helps.
You know, I'm kind of curious about the challenges, just moving to something different for a bit. I'm curious about the challenges that Stella has faced. I mean, it's a young organization. You started from pretty much floor level and you built it up. You know, fill us in on the sort of challenges that you faced and the things that have occurred that you kind of maybe have surprised you, and sometimes maybe not in a good way and other times maybe in a good way.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest challenge, and I'm saying this for me personally, has been the growing of our network. Now, I think we've done pretty well with that, and I've done a lot of travel in my time from Stella, but honestly, you know, if I didn't have a toddler at home, I would have probably done 3-4 times as much. Like, I am consistently having to turn down things to go to interstate or go, you know, sometimes even Western Australia to go, yep, I'll come to that, because, you know, my primary role is still very much being a mum. So that's a choice, though. You know, that's a choice I've made, that I don't want to be a parent that's jet-setting, you know, every couple of days. But that in itself has definitely presented challenges, not just locally, but overseas as well. Obviously, we have LinkedIn now, which is amazing. We've linked with some terrific agencies overseas, so that's really helped, you know, expand things over there. But this is just such a, it's such a game of network. And I think, you know, we could have done, we could have been further along a lot quicker. But like I said, that is a choice that I make, and I'm comfortable with that. With that sort of trade-off right now.
You just mentioned international agencies. This one I'm really curious about. Do you guys, how do you work with other agencies internationally?
So it's probably more, a bit more about facilitation of contact. So we still do work with some clubs directly, and likewise, some agencies will work directly with Australian clubs. But, you know, obviously I have a database of pretty much every NBL 1 club just on hand. Like, I, you know, has spoken to nearly every single club. And same with an agency that might be in France or Germany or Spain or somewhere like that. So just being able to say, oh, look, I've got this player. Where do you think they might be suitable? Can you help put me in touch with the right person? Can just save a lot of, you know, waiting, I mean, especially in the age of so many scams and things, right, as well, you know, people saying when you receive a complete cold call from someone or a cold email, it can be really hard to get through. But the second thing too is just hearing about the environment of the club, so getting a bit of an insight into what's that club, what's it actually like, what's the culture like, do they pay their players, do they look after their players? So that can be a really beneficial insight too. Get that reassurance that if a player's going somewhere for the first time, that you've not dealt with that club before, that it sounds like a pretty good place for them to go essentially.
Yeah, it kind of ties into what you said earlier about the differences between working here and internationally, is that local knowledge of, is it going to be a safe place, and yeah, is the club going to be looking after athletes properly? Because it's so easy, especially if you're looking even interstate, but especially overseas, when you're looking to play in a different league in Europe, wherever, not knowing a lot about the league, and you know, the club will sell you the world. And you don't know any different until you get there. Like, I know a couple of female basketball players and also female wheelchair basketball players who have gone there, and they've been promised, you know, access to all this training stuff, and this was their payment and how often they were going to get paid. And they got there, and that wasn't like that at all. They were just duped. But, yeah, having those contacts
is definitely helpful, having those connections.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's for the, as you said, the safety of your athletes at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Then you're going to really be able to just really secure that trust with your athletes as well, because there is a lot of trust and rapport building. I imagine that would go into being an agent, and being able to ensure that they're going to be safe above all else, other things, is super important. And then that's going to also, as a business, look really good for you.
Absolutely. And it is such a privileged position, because athletes, they're trusting you, they're relying on you, and they will so often say, what do I do? What do you think? What do I do here? So, yeah, we really take that as a privilege, and we make sure we're very thorough with any new opportunities for them.
And one of the things about your agency, looking through the website, one of our previous guests, Samba Merritt, is signed with the agency. How many agencies actually, you know, support wheelchair athletes? Because it's a sport that, I mean, it's great to watch. They've got some truly amazing athletes, but it's not something that, in all the reading and all the stuff that I've seen, I don't tend to see much in terms of agencies promoting wheelchair sports.
No, and what I would say is, it's for those kinds of athletes at the moment, it's more about helping them build a profile, because obviously, as we know, that inclusion piece is so important in sport. And again, I feel like it's something that more and more people starting to listen to. So we, again, Amber was pretty happy here, you know, in Australia. She didn't need a lot of help with her contracts, to be honest. You know, we were there if she needed help, but largely, you know, she was, yeah, obviously one of the key players. For us, for her, it was more about helping connect her with those other opportunities and help her build her brand and her voice. And that's, I feel like that's quite similar across a lot of agencies. Like, you'll see some prominent wheelchair athletes with large marketing agencies. So maybe not even a sporting agency, because that's sort of more the thing, is helping them really get their story and their message and their voice out there.
Are you, as her agent, able to give us an insight of what Amber's got planned next now that she's stepped away from basketball?
We know Amber, don't we? She does a lot of everything. She's got the fashion. She's got the, she, you know, went and did the AFL and got the MVP after like a weekend doing it or something. No, I couldn't say with any certainty right now. I think she's just enjoying the break. I know she's got a few ideas, but not exactly sure what the next step is just yet.
That's enough to keep me intrigued. So
watch this space.
Yeah.
Okay, so as we start to wrap things up, what is the one thing that you can tell us about Stella that you think makes you stand out from the other agencies, not only in Australia, but internationally?
I would say the main thing would be we've brought very strong skills over from law. I think having those legal skills, and especially having those legal skills and so much experience working with, advocating for, and being with people through times of stress and being really good at easing people through those times, I think that, along with just our really strong passion for, you know, elevating the female sport experience, I think that, yeah, I hope that makes us a good option to athletes. But it, I mean, it's important for us. Like, I think there was a bit of excitement when we came in. Everyone went, oh, amazing, like, you know, by females for females. But we don't, you know, we're not a good option just because we're girls. Like, we don't want people to go, oh, isn't that nice? Yeah. Warm and fuzzy. Like, you know, we have a lot of experience, like I said, advocating. We really do work in the athlete's best interests. We work extremely hard for the athlete. And again, I think just those additional things we put in around the agency. So yeah, athletes can be a bit more part of the community.
And it's a really good point of distinction again that, yes, you do have a law background, but working for NGOs, like, you're doing that type of law where you're really advocating and fighting for the person and the little guy, not right. Not like an episode of Suits or something like that.
No, it looks glamorous sometimes. I think, oh, is that what I was missing out on? But, yeah, and look, not that athletes are vulnerable, but I have a lot of experience working with vulnerable people, and I think those skills have really helped me. I mean, everyone, when they're needing that sort of service, are vulnerable to a degree, I guess, because they're coming to you to fill a gap that they don't have. But I think, yeah, understanding what people do need in that time where they are has really helped as well.
Yeah, I think some athletes, there's a certain level of vulnerability, though, especially the very young, keen, green athlete, the big dreams that can be exploited or misguided. Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah, it's that typical image of the agent, you know, the slick back hair, the quick talk.
Yeah, certainly.
Okay, Lauren. I really want to thank you so much for joining us. I know it's been a while that we've been sort of going back and forth to get you on the show, and it's great that we have, because I think what you're doing is amazing. I think there's a real niche requirement, and it's growing now. You know, it's one of those things that starts small and grows and becomes more important in the sporting landscape, particularly as women's sports are starting to become more popular and starting to get a higher profile. And mm-hmm. I think the reality is that there needs to be a point of difference for the agents that represent women in sports, because it's a different landscape totally to men's sports. So just got to say, I wish you all the best, because it's an important role that I think you're playing for women's sports.
Thank you, Paul. And likewise, it's amazing hearing the, you know, elevation of female voices and men, but... You know, yeah, there may be voices that haven't traditionally been heard as much. So keep up the good work.
Great. Thanks so much, Lauren. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you get our latest pod. And we really appreciate if we could get a like and a review so we can extend the reach to more listeners. And don't forget, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.